And welcome, everybody, on Overtime here on YouTube, Channel 2600, where we not only are broadcasting, but we are enabling the online chat, which we're very cautious about, but we're experimenting with it, and hopefully it goes well. Kyle, did you make it into YouTube land okay?
Yes, fully modulated.
Here you are on YouTube. And folks out in Skype land, Rob, Gila, Alex?
We are present and accounted for, and we sound good on YouTube.
All of this is true.
I'm here. I'm going to probably depart in about 5 or 10 minutes because I got to go meet some colleagues up here. But I wanted to stick around for a few
minutes. Where are your colleagues, Alex? Right now, where are your colleagues?
Where are they? They're in the same hotel.
I couldn't care less where they are. We are your colleagues, and I know where we are. And apparently, we're not very high on your priority list. Is where we are.
I see. So you're using the contraction as opposed to where are. I see.
And I'm also using guilt trips to get you to stick around a little longer.
Yeah. Well, you're a master at that.
Thank you very much.
I know you. It's like a sport to try to keep me on the phone every week, but one of the things I did want to say, and the reason why I stuck around too, was I hadn't heard that clip of Cheshire. I thought it was fantastic, and it reminded me so much of this singer, songwriter, historian, activist, organizer by the name of Utah Phillips. Has anybody heard of Utah Phillips?
Yes, I have.
You have, yeah. So I mean, the way. Even Cheshire's kind of booming baritone voice and the way he started the story and told the story and the way he sung and put it all together, and especially a story about, you know, some kind of dumb war that he made an entirely brilliant farce out of. I thought it was very Utah Phillips-like. And if our listeners haven't checked out Utah Phillips, they should. And also, I thought about Utah Phillips earlier in the program too, when Emmanuel, when you were describing the Titusville 2600 meetings that Cheshire started and banned, and often he would be the only guy there, because story that Utah Phillips tells about a miner strike in Colorado, and Rockefeller promised not to send out the militia, and he did, and it's a story about Mother Jones. And how President Roosevelt considered her the most dangerous woman in America. And when she had learned that Rockefeller sent out the militia into the coal fields, she leapt up, and she was a union, she wasn't really an organizer. She was an agitator, which, according to Utah Phillips, meant that she was hated as much by the union organizers and often as just as much by the bosses. And so when she found out that the militia had entered the coal fields or the coal mines, she leapt up and she screamed, you know, let's go get the sons of bitches. And she stormed out and she ran up the road and confronted the militia. And she didn't look to see if anybody was following her, because nobody was following her. And she confronted the militia alone. And she was 83 years old. And that was when President Roosevelt considered her the most dangerous woman in America. And so the idea of Cheshire standing there, you know, at this 2600 meeting and not really caring whether he was by himself or anybody was following him, he was doing it for the principle of it. I think there's something really beautiful about that.
I'm not sure he'd run out and confront the militia on his own, but yeah, I see the parallel there.
Yeah.
I hope she got home okay that night.
I bet she did. I bet she did. She was a tough woman.
Wow. You guys hear about the Barbie hoax, right? I'm not sure if we talked about that at all last week, but several news organizations fell for an elaborate hoax last week, claimed all Mattel toys, including the iconic Barbie doll, will be plastic-free by 2030, starting with a new line of decomposable Echo Warrior dolls made with organic materials, including mushrooms, algae, and clay. The campaign was carried out by an activist group called itself the Barbie Liberation Organization, the BLO, included a false set of news releases, advertisements purporting to be from the toy giant Mattel. The group said it wanted to capitalize on the hype that has surrounded the blockbuster Barbie film, released last month, which has earned $1 billion already. call attention to the use of plastic in toys. It turns out our friends at the Yes Men were behind this as well. So it's good to know they're still out there, still engaging in pranks like this. This is a good prank. Actor and environmental activist Daryl Hannah, in one of the clips, is strolling along a picturesque beach where she plucks a barnacle-encrusted doll from the sand. Barbie and I are about the same age, except she will never die, Ms. Hannah says, saying more than a billion of the plastic dolls lay abandoned in landfills and waterways. Another clip depicts the dolls, modeled after environmental activists, including Greta Thunberg and Ms. Hannah, using bolt cutters to break into a shell facility. It's brilliant. It's so brilliant. And if you're going to engage in pranks, these are the kinds that I think people should be part of. And, of course, Yes Men were part of the Hope conferences, for a couple of them at least, and hopefully more in the future.
Yeah, and the Barbie Liberation Front has been a project of the Yes Men for quite some time, predating this hoax. They had one, I want to say, maybe 20 years ago or so, which was, there was a Barbie doll that had a voice box, an electronic voice box, where you could push buttons to say things like, meth is hard and let's go shopping. And Mattel also had a G.I. Joe doll with a similar voice box that would say, like, you know, battle cries and things like that. And the Barbie Liberation Front, I believe, was switching the voice boxes and putting the toys back on the shelf, which I imagine was great fun for all concerned.
Absolutely, absolutely. Shall we give out the phone number?
Yes.
Let's do it. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK, see who is out there. Anyone has any thoughts or feelings or opinions, please share them with us here on Overtime, because we're just about talked out.
Absolutely. While we're waiting, I do have a note that we've been sent over Twitter. While we're talking about the loss of Cheshire, the ham radio community has also lost one of their luminaries, James Fisher from Pennsylvania, also known as AJ3DI, passed away on August 1st. And there's some memorializing and more information on AngeloneFuneralHome.com, where he has an obituary. So if you were a ham user and you knew AJ3DI, yes, we feel your loss as well.
Okay, well, this has gotten so depressing lately. I really don't know. It's we need some positivity to look forward to and to share amongst ourselves, because
it's getting hard.
It is. It
it's
really
getting
is.
Hard to stay in that frame of mind for a lot of people. I find it very difficult, and so many people, you find it just there's not enough time, or there's not another chance, of course, after hearing news like this. And people, of course, deal with it in different ways, and it's different in different circumstances. You know, there's people that are prepared and more or less, and there's sudden things like this. People that we've checked in with and looked out for a very long time. It hasn't felt good at all. It's stopped being fun in a lot of new ways, and that, I think, can be really, really difficult for all people involved in the community. So check in on people, and please share with us some good things that are going on, and inject a little spirit of fun into the things, the security. I hope the events that are going on, there's more fun in how we talk about these very dry, serious things about corporate largesse or security and all this kind of technical stuff. We can't lose sight of having some fun.
We also can't let this take over our lives and make us constantly depressed and dreading the future, because nothing has changed. This is how life has always been. This is how society has always been. What we can change amongst ourselves is our perspective, how we deal with things. Look, this is why people embrace organized religion, because it gives them a pathway that they, right or wrong, believe in, and it's a comfort. It's a comfort knowing that, you know, when this is over, there's something else. Now, you know, I think it takes as much faith to believe there's nothing as there is to believe there's something. And I think the one thing, and this gives me comfort, is that nobody who has ever walked the earth, no matter how important or how revered they are, nobody knows more than you do about what lies in the hereafter, or if anything lies there, as well as what lies beyond in the stars. These mysteries, I think, are connected. I think there's, you know, the things that we know nothing about are the things that are the potential, the future, and the unknown. So, yeah, I'm comforted by ignorance, I guess. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Also, in people's micro universe, in their personal lives, the kinds of struggles and travails and just difficulty, adversity they've mm-hmm. faced along the way, you must understand that there's so many dealing with all kinds of different things in the present.
Right.
And we can just extend our listening and patience and so forth.
I think it's so important to reach out to people, you know, while they're around you and not take it for granted. I know we say this, but we don't do it enough.
It's way easier to say than actually do.
And people are these reminders, and here's another one.
People aren't talking as much, or they're talking in guarded, PR-ready ways on social media and stuff. Right. Having personal phone calls with regularity, that kind of stuff is, meaningful right. in ways that a post or a like just isn't. So
just remember, everyone's going through similar things, if not the same things. And how they deal with it, it might be something that is beneficial to you or vice versa. So communication and being around and being engaged in things, I think that's how we succeed, how we get the most out of things. Go ahead, Rob.
And in cases like this, I'll give you an uplifting side to all of this, I think. I went to the 2600 meeting last week, and we spoke about Kevin Mitnick's business card, his metal business card that was a set of lockpicks. I had one of those, and I decided to wear it on a lanyard, a conference lanyard around my neck, just as a little observance. And so I'm at the 2600 meeting, you know, chatting with people. There are a lot of younger faces there. And someone asked what it was, and someone asked who it was, and that person then from, like, every side, someone chimed in with, oh, this is what Kevin Mitnick was about. This is, you know, things he did. And somebody brought their copies of his books and was passing them around. And that speaks to me of sort of a positive side to all of this, which is that these people whose work lasts long after they do. We have so many talks by Cheshire, so many talks by Kevin, just on our YouTube channel from decades of the conference. And there is so much other work by them out there and things that we could keep finding and keep discovering and keep sharing and keep telling each other about. And that's how any of us can hope to go on in this world after our time here is finished, is if people are still talking about us, if people are still celebrating what we had to contribute while we were here. And I think for a very long time we're going to be celebrating Cheshire. We're going to be celebrating Kevin. We're going to be celebrating all the people in our lives, public figures and people just from our own lives who we miss. And we're going to be able to keep talking about them. And sharing those stories is key, I think, to just keeping their contributions going.
Yes, Alex.
You know, on that very point, Rob, I arrived here in Vegas today, and a bunch of my colleagues are here, and our practice group leader has got a long history in the hacker community as well, and it was really funny. He set up a group chat for all of the lawyers, and a lot of the younger lawyers, just maybe their first DEF CON. Or first hacker conference that they're going to, that are part of our practice group. And he made the icon for the chat, a picture of Kevin Mitnick. And I just thought that was super cool. And he had said that, whoever figures out who this person is, you know, aside from Alex, of course, gets free drinks tonight. And people figure it out right away. But it was, I just thought it was a really cool, tribute to Kevin, and shows that we're all still thinking of him, and And he's here with us as Cheshire is, I think, in many ways. And I do think you're right, Emmanuel, that this was probably Cheshire listening in and screwing up the feed in some way so that, you know, only a low-bandwidth Lynx browser or Gopher server could access our stream during that particular period of time during his memorial. But, but they're all still with us in many, many ways, in spirit, and I think we carry them with us in everything that we do because they were such meaningful parts of our lives. And with that, I am going to go meet my colleagues and have dinner. So it was a real pleasure to see and chat with all of you. And I hope we get some interesting calls. And I'll see you all next week, right? We're on next week, aren't we?
Yeah, why don't you show up next week, Alex? Okay. Be there bright and early. All right, we'll see you then.
Okay.
All right, good night.
All right, everybody.
All right.
Good night.
All right, now he's gone. Now, of course, we're not on next week. Nobody else show up, please. Let him do that himself. He has to pay attention. This is how he learns.
Right. Always learning, that Alex. Is he really?
Is he, though? I mean, he has. Okay, look, let's talk about his microphone, because this has to be addressed.
He's passionate about knowledge.
I am so sick of turning on CNN or whatever and hearing people being interviewed, and they're talking on these crappy microphones. You know, they're cutting out. They sound awful. What happened to telephones, you know, landlines, where people sounded good and the connection didn't die and you could hear what they were saying and you could talk at the same time and they'd hear you? You know, it's not like that technology doesn't exist. Why aren't we using it?
People don't have it readily. It hasn't been, I mean, it's wireless just basically has been kicking butt and people are using something that can very easily be interfered with and drop out.
Okay,
yeah.
Kyle, it kicks butt on some things, on apps,
it's getting
and
all the
features and
yeah.
pictures and things like that. It's wonderful. But it doesn't kick butt on audio quality for a phone call. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. I mean, I'd love for it to do that, but they haven't prioritized that. And that's why, you know, people are using technology that is not quite ready for prime time to do things in prime time.
Well, they've cut the cords, right? But they haven't, you know, taken another look, you know, come back around to their landline that they cut,
right.
and infused or maybe taken advantage of some feature with maybe their broadband or some service over the top of their broadband. There were entrances. Vonage was one of the early ones.
Oh, I remember them.
Remember all the IP phone companies?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can do it yourself, but it takes technical acumen negotiating, navigating all the nuances of doing that. The technology's there. You can use broadband to have a voice call. We're doing it with a service now, but it's just not gotten the attention. And so people, when they're interviewed, what do they grab? They grab the only and the most sort of reliable in that they can contact people, but the quality of service, I agree, is just terrible.
Yeah, you're right. The technology is there. What isn't there is the prioritization. They are not prioritizing having a good audio sound, and we're not complaining enough about it. Every time you see somebody interviewed on a news program that sounds like crap, you should complain about that and ridicule them and say, not the people being interviewed, but the network that accepts this, and say, next time use a damn landline, and don't tell me they're not around. They are. In fact, 802-321-4225. How about you call us from a landline? If you have a landline, call us now, 802-321-4225, and, you know, we'll see how good you sound. Unless you have one of those, like, crackly connections because the wire's loose.
If it's a call from a caller who's being interviewed from an office or something, they have the infrastructure because the company or it's a campus system, they have invested. Because they are concerned and make it a priority for people to communicate, but at home people are just doing the most affordable thing. So maybe they'll pay for broadband, and then they'll have a cell phone. They won't have both necessarily. So yeah, and I don't know. People are often interviewed from home or not from their office where they have a fancy phone system, but it needs to be addressed because people should have a backup. A mobile phone should be for when you're moving around and mobile. It shouldn't be the only option you have. You should be able to pick up one or the other, and if there's low signal or your landline for whatever reason doesn't, you don't have enough bandwidth or something breaks, mm-hmm. then you can use your wireless in an emergency or send a text or something. But there's just not enough emphasis, and we do not have a call.
We don't have a call. Maybe nobody has landlines anymore. Maybe we're alone here. You know, it's weird, though, because I know, you know, like you said, the technology exists. I have talked to people on cell phones, and all of a sudden, it sounds great. It sounds like FM radio. And, you know, if I'm talking to somebody I don't know, I don't really feel comfortable asking them, what kind of phone do you have? But the phones are out there, or the networks are out there, that are providing enough bandwidth to give you good sound quality. And that is the kind of thing that should be embraced. Imagine if phone calls sounded like the radio. They certainly could if we cared about it.
So if you're not in Las Vegas or going out to dinner in Las Vegas right now,
mm-hmm.
Please call us.
Yes, there is active discussion on the chat. People are saying they don't have landlines. Are they still allowed to call in?
How would we know? We wouldn't be able to tell. We'll tell by the sound quality. So you might get mocked a little bit for bad sound quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to judge you.
We are going to judge you.
But, yeah, what I'm curious about, though, is there anybody out there that actually has a landline? And how do we define a landline? It doesn't have to be a copper line, right? It can be something attached to your cable company, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's considered a landline.
I'm using that in the broadest sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're not trying to say, like, you can only be on this type of switch and only a rotary phone. Yeah,
but if you're on a wireless phone, you know, using a cell tower, and you don't have the best connection, well, you know, like what we heard Alex doing before, you know, or maybe you don't have the best equipment. We're better than that. We can, you know, sound like we used to sound in the 60s. I hate to have to say that. We have a phone call. I take it.
Yes.
All right. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Evening, Governor.
This would be.
You want to borrow a database?
This would be Zaf from London, I believe.
He's got a database for sale.
Now, yeah, I'll bet he has a better connection to us than somebody calling from down the street.
Well, I'm not on a landline, so I am cheating.
Okay, what are you on?
Mobile phone.
But see, his mobile doesn't cut out. He's got good service.
Well, not yet. He's only said a couple sentences.
We've never been on a phone call with Zaf, and his phone has been the problem.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
No.
Maybe England is just better, maybe.
They've thought it through.
Uh-huh. Hey,
it's late at night.
Uh-huh.
The network isn't being used, and I don't move when I'm on the phone.
Okay, well, that's good, yeah.
That's
you should have seen Alex. He was moving all over Las Vegas while he was talking to us, so that's why the audio was going in and out. It was really something. But
well, he's a lawyer. He's probably chasing an ambulance.
It's a very demanding environment, that Las Vegas, I hear.
Well, the legal environment as well.
Well, that
but,
too.
But, yeah. Zap, can I ask you, do you understand the whole voting registrar thing over there in the UK, the anonymous thing we were talking about before?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Yes, a little bit. It's one of the reasons why I was phoning in.
Okay.
Because, you know, once I got information from London, I phoned in. When I registered to vote, there was two options. It happened maybe 3-4 years ago, not too short in time. And they said you could go on a public record, which is viewable, and also get sold on to wherever they sell big, large databases of stuff. Or you could go on the private database, where your details are not publicly seen on the book, so it wouldn't get sold on. That's all I know.
And I don't know why anybody wouldn't pick the latter if they had that opportunity.
Well, I chose that option because I know in the old days they used to have the electrical registers publicly viewable in the library. So it had your name and address.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were silly enough to register your children as they came up to the age of 18, so they were legally to vote, I think they could go on the register when they were 16 and it would have their date of birth on there.
You can register other people?
Well, if you're a parent, I would have thought.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't think that's how it works here.
A form comes through the letterbox, normally around about September, and then you put all the names of who lives in that household who would be able to vote at the next general election, which I believe is next year. So I live by myself, so there's only one name. And if you've pre-registered before, normally your name is printed on there, and I just want you to confirm that the details are correct.
I see. It sounds like they make it easier for people to register to vote over there.
Well, it used to be. They've just recently introduced a new law where you need ID to vote.
Really? In the UK, you need ID in order to vote?
You need photographic ID. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, I don't have photographic ID that's valid.
Wow. Yeah, you know, there's a big debate going on in many states. A lot of states require photo ID, but a lot of states like New York do not. It's difficult for people who don't have easy access to either get out to a place where they can get their picture taken or fill out the right forms or pay all the fees that are involved. Is there anything you can say about the challenges that this presents to people?
Well, the poor basically are normally the ones that don't have passports or driving license or photographic ID that's valid. They're the ones that are going to be stopped from voting.
Yep, same concern here.
Yep. Well, there is a system in place where you can actually get a voter's card, which can be used as ID at the next election. And that's what I'm hoping to get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I know, the only two things that you need for ID is you need a digital photo, which is like a passport condition. You need to have certain criteria. It has to be a plain background. You can't wear a hat, can't wear glasses, like sunglasses, you know, usual stuff like the passport photo.
Mm-hmm.
And you need something called your national insurance number, which I think is your social security number sort of thing, equivalent in America.
Okay. Except we don't get any insurance from that.
Yeah, well, this is meant to be sort of paying for our medical. Oh, yeah, you don't know about that, do you? But, yeah, it pays for our medical stuff and when you're on welfare, unemployment, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's called national insurance. So, yeah, that's basically all I know. I don't know anything about an anonymous register. That's new to me, so I'm not too sure what was meant there. Yeah, the information is... Normally, you can go to the library from the area that you can vote in, and basically your name and address would be listed there. It used to be in the old days. We're talking about, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago when I checked.
Uh-huh.
I haven't done it recently because I'm not stalking anyone anymore. So I'm kidding. So basically, I don't know if that's still true, but normally you can go to where they register the votes, and I think there might be a book in there you can check when you can maybe check on other people and stuff. I'm not too sure.
We have a somewhat low-tech system in New York where basically, you know, you give them your name. You have to walk into a place in person when you vote. You give them the name and the address. You say the address. They look you up. They find you. You sign your name. And you have to, the signature has to match, period. Now, I don't know many people, I don't know any people who commit voter fraud, but in order to commit voter fraud, you'd have to be able to walk in there, show your face, get the address right, and on demand sign the name the same way the person signed the name the last time, and not get caught in that particular way. There is not a problem, at least not in this part of the country, not in this state, with voter fraud. And that has ever been revealed, and that's why people argue against this. Also, every assumption that people make, oh, it's not that expensive. Well, to somebody who's poor, it is that expensive to go and get a photo ID. It's not inconvenient. Well, to somebody who works all day long, maybe has two jobs, yeah, it is inconvenient to have to go stand on a line at some agency somewhere to get an ID card. It's enough to keep you from voting. And I think that's really why you see so many conservatives pushing for voter ID, because they know those people will be weeded out and you won't have those mostly Democratic voting people online on election day. And I think they'll do everything possible to ensure that, even if there is no crisis that they're conjuring up and making people think that this is something that needs to be done.
Yep, it's the same in the UK. Same kind of things that they're planning, same kind of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny how that's become a tactic worldwide. It's sort of exported. It's very familiar what you described earlier. So
mm-hmm.
Funny play there. But it's not the way voting should be. It shouldn't be this impossible thing that you have to do all kinds of testing and qualifying should just be an act that participants, citizens, citizenry has ready access to when the time comes. So.
Yeah, well, you know, they got to get the new world order in there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to talk a bit about Cheshire?
Please.
There's one thing I'd like to know. Did he ever get his book published?
That's a good question. I know, Robin Gill, you were asking about that earlier.
Yes, indeed. We have been asked about that. And also, somebody in our chat seems to have a copy in storage somewhere, possibly. So they're going to, I think, if they would be so very kind as to have a look for us and see, or if anybody else listening, because apparently he was selling early drafts, and I vaguely remember this, he was selling early drafts of his book on a three and a half inch floppy. Just for $5. And so there are people out there who have these, and we would be very interested if anybody were into archiving or sharing the data that that was on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even know there was a book until just recently.
Yeah, I've got some good news and bad news on that. I've got good news. I did have a copy of that disc, but it's from 2000. The bad news is I don't know if I've still got it.
Okay. Well, that's not really news yet because you don't know. So it's a possibility.
Yeah.
I'll take it as good news that you might have a copy someplace. Or I'm sure somebody has a copy somewhere.
I was going to say, there's somebody in the chat that said they've got a copy. It'd be interesting to find out what year he got that disc.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got my disc in 2000. So if he got it after 2000, he may have a different version or a longer version of Cheshire's book.
Well, I know Cheshire had a website, probably it's still there, and knowing Cheshire, he probably would have just put the book on his website. So I don't have the website's URL in my head right now, but I can probably track it down. And
people can do that too, so I won't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of problems, technical hitches today. I don't think that was Cheshire. I think that was Kevin.
They're battling it out. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, also, has anyone checked on Rebel? He normally is the first person to phone in. Is he still alive?
Well, it was last week. I'm pretty sure he's okay. Maybe he was traveling somewhere. I don't know. I
think he said he was traveling this week.
Okay. I don't keep track of Rebel's whereabouts unless it's too close.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. I waited quite a while to phone in, wondering if Rebel would phone in, because he has a tradition of phoning in first.
Yeah, I think everybody was waiting. Yeah, everyone was being very, very courteous and saying, well, Rebel has to be first. And then, he didn't call, so thank you for being the first.
Now the rush comes.
Yeah, now the gates will open.
Yeah, now that they know they can ring, they will be ringing, and they can ring on cellular phones, and if they've got a landline, it'd be even better. But I'm really sad about Cheshire, because I actually got more interaction with Cheshire. I remember in 2000, we stayed at Knotwork, and he was there. There was my South African buddy was there as well. And, you know, I got to know Cheshire quite well in those few days of Hope H2K.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And, he was a lovely guy.
That was actually Beyond Hope in 1997.
No. I went to Two Hopes.
Oh, you went to Two Hopes. Okay, because you guys were there for Beyond Hope, but you were also there for H2K. Okay.
That was the first one.
All right.
That's probably the first time I met Cheshire.
Uh-huh.
And he used to like paying his way by, as he called it, schlepping the stuff that we had to carry up to set up the conference.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, he's actually, I was watching a documentary on YouTube called New York City Hackers. And he's mm-hmm. got a little section in that, because I know he was in that, because it was from 2000 when I was around again.
Right, right. I think that was made by a friend of ours in Norway. I think he made that film,
yeah,
New York City Hackers.
Someone from Europe did it. If you're
yeah,
very
big.
Keen
big
on
from
it,
Norway.
Like
yeah, it's
seeing
good.
Me for 2 seconds or something in it. But, I remember I had a lot of memories, and then seeing him in 2000 again, you know, it was when I really got to know him, sort of thing, and we got chatting. And like I said, I bought the disc. Somebody on the chat said he got given the disc, and I'm like, hey, I got ripped off. But you know, that's Chester. He used to like pay his way to go to these conferences by doing things and selling things. But he was a nice guy, and it saddens me that he's passed. I don't know what God's doing upstairs at the moment, but he's building one hell of a hacker team at the moment.
That's true. That's very true. All right.
All right. That's all I've got to say. I'll get off the line. Somebody else can phone in.
Great hearing from you, and hopefully we'll hear from you again in 2 weeks when we're back on the air.
Well, I hope nobody dies in 2 weeks because, you know, if I know them, I'm going to phone in again.
Like I said, this is the way it's always been. It's just going to continue in unpredictable ways.
All right.
All right. Be well.
I'll see you later, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, bye.
Good night.
Thanks for checking in. Thanks.
Before we go to our next caller, or while we're waiting for our next caller, did have a clarification question. Emmanuel, we have somebody asking, didn't you call the show one time from a satellite phone when you were traveling?
Yeah, I wasn't aware I was on trial here, but yeah, I used a satellite phone. Why? What of
it? In the discussion about mobile phones, landlines, copper wires.
Okay, let me explain something. Let me explain. I was either on the Trans-Siberian Express or a freighter in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Those are times when you don't have a landline. I get that. And a satellite phone was a good alternative for that particular situation. But if I'm in an apartment or an office, you know, landlines are fairly common in those kinds of environments, or they're easy to get. You know, I wouldn't want to sound like I'm on the moon if I'm actually just down the block. So I just wish we wouldn't accept that as you know, the norm these days.
We have a phone call.
I hope that answers the question. We have a phone call? Okay, let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off Talk Overtime.
Yeah, hi. Did you guys hear about this story I just read on Gizmodo about CNET, that they deleted thousands of articles in an attempt to improve their performance in Google search results?
Oh, my God. Really? That's so sad. Yeah. That's so pathetic.
I mean,
was that intentional or an accident?
It sounds like it was intentional.
No, it's intentional. It said tech site CNET has deleted thousands of old articles over the past few months in a bid to improve its performance in Google search results.
And well, that's a bit Orwellian, don't you think, to, you know, change the past so that you improve your future?
Yeah, it's counterintuitive. Yeah. Like, what's the...
No, it's actually something I would expect to happen at some point.
What does that mean, though? Is that like site loading performance, or just... search
it quotes
optimization.
Someone, their director of marketing and communications, removing content from our site is not a decision we take lightly. Our teams analyze many data points to determine whether there are pages on CNET that are not currently serving a meaningful audience. This is an industry-wide best practice for large sites like ours that are primarily driven by SEO traffic.
That's disgusting. I'm sorry. First of all, I want to know examples of the pages they deleted and who this. What was the phrase you used? Insignificant audience, or what? Why they refer to people?
It said meaningful audience. They're looking to see whether there are pages on CNET that are not currently serving a meaningful audience.
Yeah, I'd like to know what they consider to be not a meaningful audience. You know, is it numbers? Is it the type of people? Is it the subject matter? That's I don't really embrace the idea of changing something that has been printed. You know, I come from the printed magazine world, so it's kind of hard to do that. But even on social media, if you say something stupid, you've said something stupid, and you shouldn't unsay it. First of all these people will be commenting on your stupid remark. If you remove it, it's not going to make any sense. All these people are commenting on something you have no idea what they're talking about. You said it, deal with it, improve it, correct it, or whatever, but don't erase it. That's just my perspective, and it seems to be a shrinking one, because most everybody these days seems to think they can just go back and change something they don't like, even in magazine articles. And you don't get a very good sense of reality by doing that.
And he goes on to say, in an ideal world, we'd leave all of our content on our site in perpetuity. Unfortunately, we are penalized by the modern internet for leaving all previously published content live on our site.
I'd like to know, how are they penalized exactly? What does Google do to them that makes them cower in fear so? You know?
I don't know. It just sounds ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Thank you for pointing this out. This is terrible, and it's something that I think we need to focus on. Rob, you seem to have something you want to say.
Yeah, I mean, the the issue with CNET in particular, I mean, this will be terrible on any site, but CNET has been around for such a long time. They were one of the first sort of tech news sites that were, you know, legitimizing online news. They were doing this in the 90s. This is a historical record that they have
right.
of material they've been putting up since the very early days of the modern web, and it's a real loss to not have access to that stuff anymore.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, and it said they've also laid off hundreds of journalists, and they'll lose access to their articles, you know, if they're looking for other work. They don't have access to their articles anymore
wow.
because they've been deleted.
It's not a good week for CNET. Are they going to kick some puppies, too, while they're at it? They're just not doing good things.
This is the preface of really bad stuff usually, like the end of places like that. Because
right.
this sounds like a wholesale cost-cutting thing. Like, they don't want to host
yeah.
it, and they're blaming the search engine because nobody wants to find out about operating systems from 1998 or, you know, whatever articles there are. I mean, why wouldn't they have something built into the life cycle of their articles for older stuff?
Yeah, why don't you call DNet or something if you don't want to hold it, you know, host it on CNET? You don't erase things. You don't erase your history.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah,
it says they were bought out by Red Ventures, a media conglomerate, in 2020, and they laid off 10% of their staff recently.
So they're liquidating it. That's what
yeah.
it sounds like. They're gutting it, and they're going to try to trade on the brand, CNET brand and stuff.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah.
Gila did just point out to me a section of this article on Gizmodo, which does say that when an article is slated for deletion, CNET is maintaining its own copy and also sending the story to the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine. So it's not being completely lost, but it's putting another barrier between, you know, that information and somebody who might benefit from it that wasn't there before, and offloading the responsibility onto the Internet Archive, which, you know, I'm glad the Internet Archive is there, but This is still a very sad occurrence.
It's also the reasoning behind it, because they're afraid of what Google will do, search engine optimization. It's pathetic to see decisions made based on that.
I had a question. What was the topic of Cheshire's book that you were talking about just a few minutes ago? What was the content in that book that he'd written?
I think this is an autobiography, but
I
don't
never
know.
Seen it. Yeah, I don't think we have any idea.
I hope it sees the light of day.
Yeah, I don't know either. I assumed it was an autobiography, like his story, but I don't know. No one has said.
Well, maybe somebody will send a file to you guys, and you can post it on a website somewhere, you know, on the 2600 website.
Yeah, or
I'd love to read it.
Or we'll find Cheshire's website where he might have already done that. And knowing him, I think he could have.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention, speaking of death, I just saw that Robbie Robertson from the band died today. So
yeah, you know,
people
are dying left and right. It's, yeah, and everybody will at some point, so maybe that's the comfort.
Yeah. Well, grab those articles from CNET while you can, before they go belly up or, you know, go out of business.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be long now if they have decisions like this. Thanks, thanks for letting us know.
All right, have a great night.
Take care.
You too.
What does CNET stand for? Why is it called CNET? Does anybody know?
It is short for Computer Network.
Is it?
According to Wikipedia. It is short for Computer Network.
All right, and I'm not sure if that really pertains anymore. Wow. We have another call?
Yes.
And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Greetings. It's Delchai out in Vegas.
Hey, Delchai, how you doing?
Hey, we got a call from Vegas.
Hey, good. I was the one who brought up Cheshire's book, because forever ago at H2K2, he gave me a 3.5-inch floppy, and he'd handwritten Cheshire's book on it.
Oh, wow. Well, that sounds like you have a book.
It was a kind of autobiographical thing. I can't lay my hands on it right now. I think it's in my collection of old cassette tapes in my lab here somewhere, and I haven't found it yet. But as soon as I find it, I will get it and upload it so you guys can have it.
Okay, yeah, get to work then. We expect you to don't go to DEF CON or anything like that. Go and search for this floppy.
Oh, yeah, important. Don't go to DEF CON.
No, this
well, you know, the first thing I got to do is get a 3.5-inch drive.
Right.
Okay, maybe all right, go to DEF CON, get a 3.5-inch drive, come back, and search for it.
Yeah, that could help
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that will help.
But there you go.
This one little task is actually going to get all of that stuff very organized. Right. I just know it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what's funny is this is the second historical find for me this year.
Oh.
And it's kind of interesting. My first historical find is I actually validated a piece of urban legend. And I was going to release it at DEF CON.
Uh-huh.
Okay, does anybody remember being a kid watching cartoons on Saturday morning and you saw this cartoonish PSA, and it was a picture of a guy walking towards you, and his face got red, and his steam came out of his ears, and his teeth grew out, and there was a song/poem being sung in the background called Hate Hurts You. Hate, it makes you feel like hating. Hate, it's a poison that corrodes. And it was a PSA from a Jewish society, Chattaquatic Society, and it was an anti-hate message. And what it was this little mini cartoon of a person exploding from all the hate inside of them. And it ended with a guy slamming on the guitar and goes, "Hate hurts you." Now, this was very short-lived because it freaked kids out across the country. If you do a cursory Google search for Hate Hurts You, you will find people in boards and messaging all over the country. Oh, my God, that thing terrorized me as a kid. That commercial was so scary. One guy even said he stopped watching cartoons because they put it on in the middle of a cartoon block.
Wow.
Now, here's the thing. The original disappeared shortly after it aired, within 3 months. And no one heard about it again until the 80s. And in 82, 83, a shortened 10-second version appeared on TV, and again, bang, disappeared. And no one will talk about it. I made FCC inquiries. I made FOIA inquiries, I've gone through acres of TV station documentation. And no one will talk about this thing. I finally tracked down people in charge of the Information Society, and that organization disbanded. And there was no information on it to be found. And then I found one person who claimed to have been the chancellor. And he said, "Yes, I remember that ad. No, I can't help you. Goodbye." And bang, he was gone. And over the years, people had put it. You would think, right, this is on YouTube. This is on Facebook, right? No. Every single instance of this that has been on the net has been taken down. Except for a handful of YouTube videos that showed the 10-second version. And it's funny because Internet Archive has the long version, and they took it down, and they would not answer any emails asking why they took it down. Then they had the 10-second long version, and they took that down, but somebody made a cam picture of it playing. So you can see the old Internet Archive user interface playing the 10-second version in a YouTube video.
Wow.
So over the years, I looked over this thing, and all over the Internet, there are pictures of it. There are still pictures. People talk about being spooked by it and freaked out by it and how it destroyed them as kids and stuff like that. So I decided to dig into it. And I honestly could not – I kept getting dead ends. Legal stoppages, you can't see this, you can't do this. People denied that it ever existed. And then I came across a small miracle. There was a guy, a J. Michael McDonald, who had an immense collection of television shows, commercials, PSAs that he made in order to have a history of broadcast TV in the United States. And it was an amazing collection, huge collection. And when he died, that collection went to the government. It's in the Library of Congress. And when I started piling through that collection, I found a copy of the full version of that PSA.
How did you go through that collection? How did you go through the collection?
Because there was a website dedicated to it, and it had an inventory. And I just went, what happened was I just got a hit searching for key phrases, and I found the inventory. It's on a particular 16-millimeter reel. And it's buried in the 16-millimeter reel along with other commercials and stuff. So I found it in text, at least. It says it exists in this collection. That collection went to the Library of Congress. The Library of Congress has put it next to the Ark of the Covenant in, like, one of their underground bunkers where things full of they'll get to eventually. And I spent the last 2 years going back and forth with them trying to get a copy of this. First they said it didn't exist. Then they said they found it and they had to send for it. It took 3 weeks to get it out of the archives. And then one of their people said, yes, we found it, we verified it, we watched it, you can't have it. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is so about this that you can't have it? And after going back and forth and back and forth, it turns out that there's actually a copyright issue with PSAs. Not that the PSA itself is copyrighted, but its contents, music, video, so on, can be copyrighted. So you have to go through this incredible process of requesting and finding the original copyright holder and getting permission for them to make a copy for you.
That sounds like the ad agency or something, the production company that actually made it that retains.
Right.
It. Okay.
But nobody will admit that it exists. So I spent another 6 to 8 months, and finally I discovered a loophole. First of all, you can argue the fair use doctrine because it's a PSA. And that isn't always successful, but you can. Second, you can say, and I am doing scholarly research on it because I am doing a big write-up on this thing.
Uh-huh.
And so, but then they said something really interesting. They said, if you want to, we can get the reel for you and you can come in and watch it in a viewing room.
Oh, definitely. What, go to the Library of Congress and watch something on a reel? Definitely.
Yes. And the thing is, I'm on the wrong side of the country, and, you know, all of my fans and foes alike know I'm super captain disabled now, so I can't really travel. So I hit another dead end, and then they said, oh, yeah, by the way, you can watch it, but you can't do anything with it. So I stumbled across a group of people, and this is really bizarre. I didn't know they existed. There's a list of people that are professional researchers who will go to the Library of Congress for you and do your research for X dollars an hour. So I hired three different ones, and one of them finally got through and found it. And they were able to go there, and they were able to watch it. And they said, yes, this is it. This is the full 30-second version. And it has different, it's different sound, different audio from the 10-second version. This is what you've been looking for. And I said, great, now get me a copy of it. Well, they refused, they refused, they refused. And then I pulled out the magic wand, which I very rarely do. And I said, look, I'm a disabled individual, and I can't go there. So I think it's a reasonable accommodation to make a video of this and send it to me because of my handicap.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed to that.
Interesting.
So they allowed my researcher to go in with a cell phone camera and make a copy of the full 30-second version, which I now have.
Wow. Okay, when can we see it?
I can put it up on Dropbox, and I'll email you the link.
Okay, what's going to happen to us if we see this? Are we going to go crazy, or what?
You might. You may actually go. It may be one of those Videodrome kind of things, you know?
You may end up
saying, you know, death to Videodrome, long live the new flesh.
That's it's kind of scary, but, you know, hate hurts
it
you.
It is.
Hate hurts you is a very controversial thing to say. I mean, you know, these days,
yes.
Hate is a platform that people run upon, so I
That's
don't know.
Why I started looking into it.
Uh-huh.
That is the exact reason, because hate is the platform of choice right now. Everybody is utilizing hate in order to get people to gather under a flag of hate and vote a certain way. And people are being exploited by this
mm-hmm.
in the most fundamentally rudimentary way we haven't seen since you know, anti-vaccine stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got this local guy who's a complete whack job, who is literally going around telling people that the COVID vaccine is the mark of the beast from the Bible.
Yes, it was prophesied.
And that getting the injection of COVID into you puts the 666 on your forehead.
Uh-huh.
Because these are the end times. That's how we're going to be judged.
You know, 666, it can be anywhere on your body, by the way. Mine's on my foot.
But traditionally it's supposed to be on the forehead, I think.
It's supposed to be.
My life is not guided by other people's mania. We have got
to... Oh, no,
no. What kind of heresy is that? If it's not guided by someone else's mania, what is it going to be guided by, for God's sake?
You know what? I realized what I said when I said it.
Listen to the people.
Never mind.
The people who did their own research. Listen to them. And shut up about your research. I'm sorry, Deltra. I continue.
What I was saying was that, I'm not saying that it's a thing, but if you read the King James Version of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
that particular fingerprinted version, that they say it's on your forehead.
Okay.
Now, people would put it all over them, so I've seen people with it on their ass cheeks. I mean, it's not...
You've seen people with it. Okay, yeah, I won't get into that, but, the kid on the old man, it was under his hair.
I live in New York City, Emmanuel. You know this.
Yeah, no, I do.
You know I used to live in New York City.
I'm not going to pursue that.
There are things I've seen that most people should never see.
Uh-huh, why you're where you are now, yeah. All the way out in Nevada. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's another story.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's bizarre that they're getting away with this, that people are so inundated by hate and, quote-unquote, educated.
By the way,
educated for ignorance.
A fun Nevada fact that I'll bet people don't know is that Reno is further to the west than Los Angeles. I saw that in a bar. It's true. Look it up.
Yeah, I know. I know it is. I've been to Reno.
Well, yeah, but being in Reno doesn't mean you know that it's further west than Los Angeles. I'm still not entirely sure how that works.
I've driven to Reno, and I've driven to Los Angeles, and I know how to read the odometer on my car.
Okay, well, actually, we just look at a map, I suppose. That's probably the easiest way. All right, well, Deltra, so congratulations on getting this. Now, it makes me wonder how many other things are being, kept from people, like this 30-second PSA.
This has been a... very, very weirdly kept thing since the 70s.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to know who made it. I mean, are there names behind it?
The Jewish, I can't pronounce it correctly. It's the Jewish Chautauqua Society. They no longer exist. They changed their name and rebranded themselves.
We'll find them. We'll track them down.
It's an organization of people of the Jewish faith
mm-hmm.
doing educational outreach. All of their other PSAs are just about celebrating the Jewish faith. Here's a video of us having dinner together. Here's our heritage. And just educating people. And none of them were animated. This was the only one that was animated.
And are the other ones easy to get access to?
Very easy.
Okay.
A cursory YouTube search will find tons of the other ones. but not the Hate Hurts You one.
Well, I'd like to know who is behind the attempted burial of this particular message, because that's telling.
Yeah. If I'm to believe the person I spoke to on Facebook, who said they were the chancellor of the organization during that time, he basically just stole. He just said, "Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's gone. Forget about it." And that's it.
And don't ask any more questions.
Well, yeah, don't ask any more questions.
It seems like logical that they would be the entity suppressing it if they had aired it in multiple markets or a very large market, got feedback from the stations and said, hey, look, people are outside with pitchforks. They're upset about their Saturday cartoons being interrupted by this.
But
it's not landing. And then they yank it and then maybe want it not to be a part of what they're known for, which is, as you said, the more polished cultural outreach stuff going forward after that incident.
Yeah, but the Hate Hurts You. I would want to be known for that
they
message.
They should revisit it. It's a worthy message, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, it really is. So what if it traumatized a bunch of kids in the 70s? You know, they should have known
Here's
better.
Here's the thing about the people with pitchforks.
Oh, yeah, I'm making that up.
No, you're not wrong. But television stations are required to hold on to those complaints.
Oh.
Unfortunately, they're only required to hold on to them for X many years.
Right, right.
I think it's like 7 years. And then they don't keep the records anymore. So any records of that are gone. I found that out. I went to several TV stations. I used to work in broadcast TV.
Okay.
So I know the lingo and I know who to talk to. Plus, I filed a FOIA request with the FCC. And the FCC came back and said that they had nothing on record about complaints about it. But
okay.
Again, just go onto Google and search for it. You'll find all kinds of like lost archives or lost television or, hey, do you remember when you were a kid?
Sure.
And people are talking about this thing. Like some people they claim it still haunts them and then they're in their 50s now.
Okay. Well, I'm not disputing that it could yet be mysterious, but
I just wanted to expand on that. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
If there were any complaints, they were long since gone because
no one
the
was
retention in, period is passed.
Right. They weren't looking back at their own stuff. They were moving on, and there wasn't as much intrigue. People were just dealing with the impact of the broadcast.
Here's a thought, though. Do you think it's possible that this PSA might have been played in other countries?
That is something I never explored.
Okay, because maybe it's available in other places. Maybe somebody listening has seen it, too, and isn't in the United States. But, Delta, let me ask you this. Would you be daring enough to play the audio that we could have on our YouTube channel and see what YouTube does?
We could try it. I'd have to make an audio file and ship it to you, but yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? Maybe we'll do this in a future show. And we're conspiring.
It's not likely that their automated stuff will pick it up because it's so old.
But it's possible that somebody might freak out and get them to punish us severely. And of course, you know, right now we're conspiring, so I guess that's another offense. We'll see what YouTube does.
The thing is that legally speaking, okay, I don't see any problem because for a number of reasons. Number one, this is scholarly research. We are researching for an informational article about an event that happened in the 1970s that is pertinent to social structure today about the use of hate to control people, number one. Number two, it's a PSA, public service announcement. Those things are technically in the public domain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, as they told me, the music and this and that and other may not be, but the PSA itself is in the public domain. Three, because it was broadcast on open television air long before the days of cable, this thing is out there. It was openly put out there. We should have a fair use case.
It's being transmitted into outer space, in fact. That's how out there it is.
Right. And four, we constructive debate and education. And there you go. We're covered four different ways right there.
So a question. Now, you've seen this now, right?
Yes.
And you haven't gone mad, right?
Actually, I did go a little mad when I was a kid.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, after seeing this, obviously, I'm not talking about those days.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember being traumatized by it as a kid.
Uh-huh.
But that's why I remembered it. Yeah. And I can watch it now without a problem.
It's good marketing. If you're traumatized, people remember. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
So now, let me just ask you, is this the kind of message that would work on the radio, or do you need the video?
You need the video.
So just saying,
on the radio,
hate hurts
on the radio, the message would be obvious. It'd be a good message. You know, when you hate, who do you hurt the most? You hate you hurt yourself.
Yeah, what's wrong with saying
hate
that?
Hate hurts you.
We could say that on the radio.
Nothing,
right?
Nothing yeah. wrong with saying that.
So let's
the
pledge
video.
To
mm-hmm. Oh, one thing that's interesting about the video, about the audio portion of the video, I forgot to mention, is that at the very end of it, they say. Who, yeah, when you hate, who do you hurt the most? You hurt you, or hate hurts you. And then there's a gunshot.
Oh, okay.
If you're listening carefully, you'll hear there's a gunshot at the very end.
Oh, that's a new addition to this whole thing. Wow, okay.
Yeah, when I was doing the analysis of it, because it's not a great copy, but it is a copy. It's not the 10-second version. Now, I've heard rumor that there was another version of the 30-second one, but I have never seen or heard of that one. I think that one was just a myth. I think this is the actual, what I have is the actual original 30-second
version. I see one right now on YouTube. It says, Hate Hurts You, 1974 version reconstruction.
Yes, it's only 10 seconds long.
No, it's 31 seconds long. There's another one above it that's 11 seconds. That is the PSA.
Well, okay, that's
1982.
I don't know about the reconstruction. I haven't seen that one before.
Uh huh. Well, I don't know if I dare to play it on the. Well, it's on YouTube already. So, what's the worst thing that can happen if I play this? Should I? Let's take this. Put this to a vote.
1974 version reconstruction. Let's see. Okay, this looks like.
I'll tell you, that face is freaking me out.
The audio is all screwed up. It looks like they're just playing the 10-second version at a slow speed.
Oh, is that what they're doing? Okay.
If you listen to the audio, it's like roar, 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 roar. So, yeah, they're playing the 10-second version at slow speed.
How about this one?
Also,
Hate Hurts Your original 15 seconds below that.
Okay, that's the shorter version, yeah. Okay. Is that the one that says 1982?
Yeah, that probably just has titles or something.
There's a bunch of disturbing things here.
Yep, but they're mostly all the 10-second versions. And if you look, there's one that says Hate Hurts You PSA. That's the one you see that has the old Internet Archive graphical user interface, GUI, in the right-hand corner.
I see one here that's 21 minutes long. That's called The Scariest Lost PSAs. I had no idea this world existed before tonight.
Oh, yes. There are other PSAs that are scary. There are other ones. I mean, there are whole public service movies. Have you ever heard of Red Asphalt?
I have not.
It's a shock movie that was made for driver's education. That
it's about people getting hit by cars or run over and blood on the asphalt. That's why it's Red Asphalt, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's a PSA?
Yep, well, it was not a PSA, but it was like an educational film.
Okay.
See, yeah. You know, here's another one. It says Hate Hurts You original, but it's not the original. It's the same text of the song, the lyrics of the song,
mm-hmm.
but they're using copypasta spooky images.
Yeah, it's like original Ray's Pizza. You can never get the actual original. Gila, did you have something?
I found something interesting,
yeah.
Which is the advertising column from the New York Times, December 19th, 1975. Excuse me. Talking about some PSAs, including this one, speaking with a woman named Jane Crowley, who is in charge of standards and practices at NBC. She used to be a nun, and the people on Saturday Night Live hated her.
wait. Among people on Saturday Night Live hated her because she was a nun?
No, she was like, they hated her because she was standards and practices. Also,
off NBC,
she used to be a nun.
I get it.
No. Among the public service television commercials now in hand at the NBC TV network, according to Jane Crowley, who's in charge of that division of work, are spots dealing with bigotry from the National Conference of Christians and Jews, Religion in American Life, an ad council effort, the Jewish Chautauqua Society, mm-hmm. the theme Hate Hurts You, and St. Francis Productions.
Interesting. So that was in the New York mm-hmm. Times in 1975?
1975.
And that's probably before everything hit the fan, right?
I would think so,
That must have been before.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll peruse that article and do some more research into it. It's fascinating. Thank you for sharing this with so many people.
it's not often you get a chance to debunk, or not debunk, but to validate
mm-hmm.
a urban myth.
Yeah, we're bunking it, I think. I think we're very much bunking it.
Yeah, bunking it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that article. I don't think I've seen that one before from the New York Times.
Delsha, if it would help, I can drop it in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, that'd be okay. That'd be cool. Hey, by the way, okay. Dylan, were you able to drop Cheshire's picture from 18?
Unfortunately, there is a 200-character limit, and I cannot drop a picture. I can't paste a picture in.
In other words, you can't paste a picture because pictures don't have characters.
You don't have it's not hosted anywhere, yeah. But short all URL. Right. We'll get that.
We'll get that picture out there.
Something up.
Wow, I want to see Cheshire at 18 years old. That would be something.
And also something very interesting is that it's a signed picture. Like, it's just a copy of the picture of himself that he had given to someone, and it's written on. This is an amazing piece of ephemera.
That's great. Okay, folks, I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight. So, thank you for that call, and have a great time at the conference.
Hoorah.
All right. And I look forward to seeing where this goes. Take care.
Yes, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. All right, good night. That was our friend Deltry out in Las Vegas. Definitely fascinating. It's the kind of stuff hackers get up to, you know? When you get obsessed with something, you want to track it down, you have to do that.
We talked about it earlier, but you never know what other people are toiling with or what they're hacking on in small and big ways. It's not always published. It's not always in a paper or in a book or posted online. But, you know, have fun in the process. Be passionate about that stuff and share what you can with other people. I think those are some true lessons in what we talked about and what we're experiencing as a community. So
absolutely.
Stay safe at all these events, too.
Yes, yes, do that. And keep in touch. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah, I just want to tell listeners out there, if you're interested in the sort of thing surrounding finding that old PSA, there's a whole scene online of people into lost media. And if you go to lostmediawiki.com, you can begin exploring that whole world. There is this community of very resourceful people who have all sorts of things they're looking for, ways to find them. And the community comes together and makes incredible things happen. And they have a page about this PSA. They also have countless other things. And it's a lot of fun to get involved in that sort of scene if you're into it.
Sounds like the topic of a hope talk in the future,
definitely,
perhaps.
Definitely. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We're going to sign off for tonight. We will see you in 2 weeks. Good night, everyone.